Inequality isn't inevitable, it's a choice. This simple yet revolutionary claim forms the heart of Thomas Piketty's monumental work. Throughout history, societies have justified their inequalities through elaborate ideological constructions that appear natural and inevitable to those living within them. From medieval Europe's three-tiered society to today's billionaire worship, these justifications persist until they suddenly collapse. The data is staggering. In 1980, the top 10% captured between 25-35% of national income across major economies. By 2018, this share had risen to between 35-55% everywhere, with the most dramatic increases in the United States and India coming directly at the expense of the bottom 50%. Yet history shows these patterns aren't destiny. The mid-20th century saw dramatic reductions in inequality through deliberate political choices, progressive taxation, public education, social insurance, labor laws, and power sharing in corporations. Remarkably, this most egalitarian period, 1950-1980, also saw the fastest economic growth, with average annual growth rates exceeding 4% in many developed nations. Countries like Sweden combined strong unions, high taxes, and extensive social programs with robust innovation and economic dynamism, proving extreme inequality isn't necessary for prosperity. How have societies justified inequality across centuries? The earliest complex societies operated on a tri-functional model, dividing society between clergy, who prayed, nobility, who fought, and commoners, who worked. Though claiming divine ordination, these systems evolved through political struggle. In pre-revolutionary France, the nobility strategically shrank from 2% to 0.8% of the population as monarchs consolidated power. The French Revolution marked the shift to proprietarian society, where property rights replaced birth privileges as the foundation of social order. This great demarcation created a new justification for inequality based on the sacralization of property, treating ownership as inviolable regardless of its origins. By the Belle Epoque, 1880 to 1914, the top 10% owned 80 to 90% of all wealth across Europe, with the Rothschilds embodying this new aristocracy of capital. This order collapsed between 1914-1945 through world wars, the Great Depression, and colonial independence movements. Private property was either abolished in communist regimes or severely constrained in social democracies through nationalizations, progressive taxation, and expanded social rights. Top marginal tax rates reached 70 to 90% in many Western nations, fundamentally restructuring wealth distribution. The post-war period, 1950-1980, saw social democratic societies flourish while maintaining capitalist foundations. These systems redistributed wealth through progressive taxation, up to 90%, public services, labor protections, and innovative corporate governance, achieving unprecedented economic equality. Germany pioneered co-management, requiring large corporations to reserve half their supervisory board seats for worker representatives. Sweden transformed from one of Europe's most unequal societies in 1910 to the world's most egalitarian developed nation by the 1970s. This social democratic compromise delivered shared prosperity. The top decile share of national income declined from about 50% before World War I to roughly 30% by 1950, remaining stable for three decades. For the first time, a substantial patrimonial middle class emerged, controlling 30-40% of national wealth through home ownership, pensions, and small businesses. Since 1980, inequality has resurged dramatically, led by Anglo-American economies. Most significant is the transformation of political alignments. Left-wing parties once performed best among working-class voters, while right-wing parties dominated among educated elites. By the 2010s, this pattern had completely inverted, creating what Piketty terms a system of multiple elites with profound implications for democratic stability. The collapse of Soviet communism permanently altered global politics. While discrediting centralized planning, it unleashed new hyper-capitalism forms, creating unprecedented inequality, particularly in Russia and China. Russia transformed from Soviet equality to oligarchic kleptocracy through specific 1990s policy choices. Shock therapy privatization allowed a small group to acquire vast state assets cheaply. By the 2000s, Russian billionaires' wealth reached 30 to 40% of national income, 3 to 4 times higher than Western levels. More concerning, Russian offshore assets now equal or exceed all legally held domestic financial assets. China took a different approach, combining Communist Party leadership with a managed mixed economy. Public ownership declined from 70% in 1978 to about 30% by the mid-2000s and has remained stable, giving the state significant economic intervention power within a predominantly capitalist framework. Nevertheless, China has experienced dramatic inequality growth, approaching American levels despite being the most egalitarian major economy in the early 1980s. Across Eastern Europe, post-communist disillusionment has fueled social nativism, movements combining redistributive policies for native populations with hostility toward immigrants and minorities, creating a political formula opposition parties struggle to counter. Piketty proposes participatory socialism as an alternative to both capitalism and Soviet communism through two key mechanisms: social ownership via power sharing, and temporary ownership through taxation and capital redistribution. His model extends German Nordic co-management by giving workers half of board seats in large firms, balancing shareholder short-termism with employee long-term interests. He couples this with progressive wealth taxation, from 0.1% for wealth below national average to 90% for billionaires. Tax revenues would fund universal capital endowments for 25-year-olds, approximately 60% of average adult wealth, or $120,000 in Europe, enabling the bottom 50% to acquire meaningful assets. Complementary reforms include progressive income and inheritance taxes, individual-based carbon taxes, and democratic equality vouchers, allowing citizens equal resources to support political movements and media organizations. Our global system faces a fundamental contradiction. Goods, services, and capital flow freely across borders, while fiscal, social, and legal systems remain national. This limits states' ability to implement just policies. Multinational corporations shift profits to low-tax jurisdictions while nations struggle to fund social programs, creating a corporate taxation race to the bottom. Piketty proposes replacing existing trade agreements with treaties for co-development that promote equitable development through verifiable common goals in taxation and carbon emissions. For Europe, he suggests a European assembly of national and European parliamentarians to approve 4 common taxes on corporate profits, high incomes, large fortunes, and carbon emissions. This social federalist approach would demonstrate that internationalism can deliver fiscal, social, and environmental justice, not just merciless competition. It would prevent regulatory arbitrage and tax competition while allowing the Eurozone to issue common bonds at identical interest rates. History is fundamentally the struggle of ideologies and the quest for justice. Ideas matter profoundly. Social position alone cannot forge theories of just society, property, borders, taxes, education, wages, or democracy. The communist disaster of the 20th century demonstrates how ideological certainty can produce catastrophic outcomes when separated from democratic deliberation and empirical reality. Ideological struggle involves a nuanced interplay requiring shared knowledge, respect, and democratic deliberation. No single group possesses absolute truth about justice. This approach demands open dialogue between diverse worldviews, from market liberals to social democrats, from environmentalists to technological optimists. Piketty's vision combines rigorous empirical research with moral clarity and practical solutions. Extreme inequality isn't inevitable, but results from specific political choices that can be unmade. By examining historical successes in reducing inequality, he provides evidence that positive change is achievable through democratic processes. The question isn't whether we can create a more equitable world, it's whether we have the courage to choose it.